Welcome to season two of the Ohana Life podcast. Last year, I tried to give you information and guests that would help you along a wellness journey so that you felt more empowered with your decision-making on health, wellness, everything related to, you know, yourself and your human body. This year, I wanted to have a different focus where we went over more how to feel empowered in learning, how you could, you know, get somebody that maybe gelled with your beliefs or what your goals were for physical strength or mental strength, and then be able to seek out and search that learning, because really learning can be at any age. This episode was so fun. Sarah Claire lives in Canada, and the day we were recording, they were having a snowstorm too. Sarah Claire is so much more incredible than I could have ever thought. It's hard to convey how much I enjoy doing podcasts and learning about the spirit of humans who could either give up or give into their life path and be strong enough to do something about getting there. You will love hearing about her story, her history, and how she approaches working with people. It's genuine how much she wants people to go throughout their day feeling safer, to build a body more well-rounded to meet life's demands and challenges, in her words, to live in grace and power for survival. We talked about her family, her background, and history. We also talked about strength training. We spoke about her stages of training someone, weight training, adaptability, and mitigating life. She talks about making the workouts fun and different, how to adapt and improvise, getting into a flow state, how to live in safe margins or landmarks, and then building from there. She likes to meet people where they're at and then let the students have some responsibility to forge through trial and error and allow for personal responsibility with what they're given. She believes in communicating well and working with a team of individuals to improve someone's life. Being patient, she strives to be joyful, kind, and intelligent in her approach. We broke down some movement concepts and talked about increasing stimulus to move patterns in safe ways with different types of muscle contractions, different tempos, and added weight. I can't wait for you to give it a listen and tell me what your favorite part was. I love you all. Enjoy.
Hi, Sarah Claire.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, good. I just want to thank you in advance for doing this.
Yeah. I mean, we both almost didn't make it because of Snowmageddon, but we're here.
We are here. So, okay. So I was trying to think back to how I started following you. Oh. And I think it was that I followed, is it Agatsu? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yep.
Okay. So somehow I was following that page. And then I think your husband, Sean, had something on there. So I started following him, and then he had stuff about you on there. So then I started following you.
Yeah. Awesome.
And that is the matrix of social media.
Right? It's a huge rabbit hole. You just keep going down.
Exactly. Yeah. So I feel like we have a lot in common. Like, we both have kids, and I think that like owning a business with kids is a whole nother level.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes.
And trying to stay at the peak of offerings while you have young kids. So do you have two or three kids?
So I have two kids. They're no longer young. They're 16. I can't believe that she turned 16 last week, 16 and 13. And then I have two rescue dogs that actually take up a lot of my time.
Yes. But I've seen them and they're adorable.
Yeah. I wouldn't change it for the world. And I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think when the kids were younger, it was like that dichotomy of like, I want to be good at my job and I want to be a good mom. And it's so hard because you're literally splitting yourself in half, and then you put yourself on the back burner. And there are times, I'm not saying you can't put yourself on the back burner, but there were times I literally was feeling like I was losing my identity. I was like, I don't know whether I'm coming or going. And I don't know if I'm good at my job or I'm good at being a mom or what's going on. So, I mean, and there's still that struggle. Like, you know, we can dive deeper into it, but I think everybody who's a parent and an entrepreneur kind of feels that way. It's like I'm failing at this and I'm failing at that. And then that's why I started my own account outside of Agatsu, because I was like, I want people to know that I'm real and that struggling is okay. It's a part of the process. And you have to actually just embrace that struggle. You can't shy away from it. So yeah, that's sort of why I started my own account.
I find similarities there as well, because when I met my husband, he was 140. What were you, 145 pounds, Steve? Yeah, 145 pounds. 6 foot tall, so skinny. And now he's like just broader and bigger and big forearms, you know? And I feel like your husband had just done that post about his first gym maybe, or the first session that he did with BJJ. Is that?
Yeah. So he's been a martial artist since the age of 7, but yeah. So he made a post about kind of the process of aging and still trying to keep up with what you used to do. And I mean, Sean is brilliant at talking about this. It's like, it's not about keeping up. It's about evolving, you know?
Yeah. He's like, meet you where you're at.
Exactly. And if you keep trying to live in the past and keep up, you're going to not have longevity in this journey.
So I consider myself like pretty strong. I'm very proud of like the mix that I have of like strengths and flexibility, and then like pain-free and mobility, things like that. And then I met you online, and you're so kick-ass. Like I can't even, so the latest post that I, what really floored me was when you had a band. So like a major resistance band with 2 kettlebells.
Yeah. A lot of people were like, what?
What? But the control, the mental control, the physical control. I mean, so I want to talk about that a little bit more, but so just so people can visualize, it was 2 kettlebells on a big strap. So you knew the strap could hold this weight, and you did one repetition of picking it up, bringing it overhead, squatting, and then putting that damn thing down. Okay. Chaos. It's like to hold all of that. So you've trained your entire life to that point, right? That's not something someone would just do.
No. And I said in that post, this is my workout for my reasons. This is not for beginners. This is not something I condone for people to do. Like I have thousands of videos on movement tips and movement snacks and how to build strength and how to, but I also have to remember who I am and that I need to challenge myself too. So that post was my challenge. Yes. And I have to show you my challenges and struggles so you know that I'm a real person, right? Mm-hmm. So I do train myself to be able to handle chaos tension because I do jujitsu, and someone's supposed to stop you at every not supposed to, they do. So it's like chess. You try to make a move and they physically are stopping you from making that move. So you have to adapt, and their body's not, you know, limp, they're moving and they're trying to move you. So I like to challenge myself in my workouts, and I don't always do it. Some of my workouts are quite boring, but I have to be able to challenge myself mentally and physically in order to excel at the sports I find important for me. And they're for me, they're not for anybody else. But I do think that training should be good for the body and the mind and meet you where you're at, right? So sometimes I test myself and sometimes I don't. And that's what that post was about.
Okay. So why don't you tell people who you are? So maybe give some history about why, because I have a whole list of all the things that you do, but maybe you can tell. Cool.
So most people know me as Sean Mosen's wife. No. No, that's not true. They actually find out later. They're like, wait, you're married to him? And I was like, yeah, because you know, I have my own identity and I paved my own way. And actually, I was a trainer before I met Sean and started working for Agatsu, and we worked together for a long time. And then we like lived in separate cities. And then one day we're like, I think I miss you. Is that weird? We're coworkers, but so that's how that happened. But aside from being Sean Mosen's wife, I grew up just in a rural town called South Porcupine. Not that that's important, but
you're in Canada.
In Canada. Yes. Yeah. So it's outside, it's a mining town outside of Timmins, Ontario. And there wasn't much in terms of organized stuff unless it was outside. So, you know, we were always outside. We were always rolling the mud, climbing rocks, doing all that sort of thing. And then for organization for sports and stuff, it was a lot of like, all the sports were for guys. Like, I hate to say it, right? So then, I wouldn't say I got stuck in dance. I liked it. I grew up and I did 18 years of tap dancing and ballet, which was super, super awesome. Except when I went to apply for university, I couldn't decide what I wanted to be. And I still can't decide. So I wanted to go for performance or kinesiology. So I ended up, I was like, well, I'm going to take a gamble. Going to go to the University of Windsor. I can only make it to one audition because of being in a rural town and it cost so much money to get to Toronto or Windsor and blah, blah, blah. So I said, well, this is the school I want to go to. So I will get my butt there somehow 16 hours later and go for the audition. And I'm saying this story because when I looked at the requirements for the audition, like I want to be a performer. So I know how to dance. I know how to move my body. I know I'm aware of things, but the list, even before they were going to look at your monologue and your song and your dance and blah, 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 was that you had to be able to do 10 push-ups, 10 pull-ups, 10 oh, wow. pistols, 10 pistols on each leg. I was like, oh my God. And it hit me. I looked at my older brother who was a weightlifter and quite a natural athlete at the time. And I was like, I've spent 18 years in dance and I can't do a push-up.
Really?
Yeah, I couldn't.
So this was, you were 18 at the time or 19?
Yeah, I was 19. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all these years of training, and if I was in a life and death situation, I'm part of my language, but I'm fucked, right? Yeah. So I think that was the biggest wake-up call for me when it came to movement. So long story short, I ended up getting into the program. I took some minor courses in kinesiology, but this whole time it wasn't about performance for me. It was about how can I build my body to be well-rounded? So whatever life demands, I can meet that challenge, right? Like that was, sorry, I have,
that's okay.
So that was like my biggest wake-up call. Like I just remember looking at that audition and going, it's not about singing and dancing and look pretty on stage. It's really about longevity in this thing we call life. And that's what I want to train for. So yes. That's sort of my background in a nutshell. Right. And you can edit out some of that long-winded story if you want.
No, I loved it. Well, so you're a trainer, you train kettlebells. Do you train the mace, Indian clubs?
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
And you do jujitsu.
Yep.
You also train in mobility and strength.
Yeah. Like, so
categorize that all under fitness trainer.
Yeah. So that's part of wanting to be well-rounded. So before I joined Agatsu, I thought I knew what a kettlebell was and how to use it, but I was sorely mistaken. But I had already been doing in Toronto, I was training like people going through chemotherapy, older clients, blind clients, disabled clients, like. And basically the woman I mentored with, she said, they're coming to you for a reason because no one else will take them. And I was like, I'd just gotten out of university. I had a bachelor of fine arts in acting. I fell short of my minor in kinesiology because I was like, oh my God, I'm being pulled in too many directions. So I just didn't finish a couple of courses, but it doesn't mean I wasn't studying. And I was the movement TA for 2 years. So I was constantly thinking about movement as the teacher's assistant, helping people develop better, being better generalist and being better well-rounded, because as a performer, you know, they don't care. They're just like next, you know, like all those big companies, if you get hurt. Yeah. I mean, yes, they do have physios and, you know, massage therapists and everything like that to help you, but they will just pick up and be like the understudy goes now, you know?
Yeah.
And so like, for me, it wasn't always about performing. It was about having longevity in that. And so before I started working with Agatsu, I was already doing that for performers and for lack of better terms, people that other trainers didn't want to touch because they were just like, oh my God, this is too scary. So I would work hand in hand with their doctors, you know, develop programs for them that were maybe outside of the box. But now it's so funny because that's what everybody does now. They're like, oh, you have to, you know, take care of mobility and body awareness first and everything. And I was like, yeah, like this, for nothing, but this is exactly where it starts. Like, this is the nucleus of what your practice should be, building body awareness and connection first.
That's pretty amazing that you did it so young, because I feel like you did it right out of the gate, so you couldn't get scared doing it later in life. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So here, I didn't say this part, because this is when I was in grade seven, my mom had a car accident that they basically told us to go in and say goodbye. Oh. Like her arm was, sorry if I tear up, but yeah. I'll never forget that day. Her arm was severed, but the skin was still attached, but her arm was broken. She had the metal pole of the car window in her head, her pelvis was cracked in three places. So they were just trying to save her life, right? Yeah. So they didn't fix her pelvis because they didn't know about it. Like, I mean, the tubes were going through her legs and feet from what I could remember to try. She had 5 pints of blood put back in her. Like, they were just trying to save her life. And so again, this is why growing up in a rural area, like, they saved her life, but she was bedridden for the better part of a year, and home care would only come for 2 hours every second day. So I had to bathe her, and I had to do the physio with her, and I was in grade seven. Wow. So at some points too, obviously being in grade seven and not being able to be a kid, I resented it. But I also had to grow up and learn about the human body, because I was like, she has to try to move her arm, and now we have to try and move her legs. And I remember, like, trying to move her body for her because she couldn't do it. So I think that's where also I kind of fell in love with the human body, because I was like, holy shit, she survived this car accident and she's fighting like hell to get back to it. And I have to step up and I have to learn about this stuff. Yeah. Otherwise, maybe she won't get better. I don't know. So I kind of felt responsible for her.
How is your mom now?
She's amazing. She's an emerging.
I mean, how amazing that you helped her. This is how I feel like, I mean, this is the yoga part of my life, right? Like, there's synchronicities to this, like, that happened, which put you in the trajectory of helping others. So, like, as close to home as that was, and as traumatic as it was, and, you know, probably horrible at that age I just can't even imagine. Then you've now taken that and helped tenfold, you know, so many people going forward. And then those people are going to remember that and help other people, you know, in their little ways that they can. So, wow.
Yeah. That's amazing. I mean, I'm not the be all and end all. I didn't do that by myself, and I still don't do anything by myself. Like, I have clients, but I also have an amazing team. Like, I have an athletic therapist on my team. I have an osteo that I refer out to, and it's really about being responsible for your part is about also working with your team, right? So it's trial and error. We, you know, someone comes into me just recently and he's got like a L4, L5 herniation. He has a herniation in his C spine and he's got a labrum tear. It's been repaired in the surgery in his right shoulder. And I'm upfront. I'm like, we are going to work together. We're going to do an assessment. I'm going to refer you out if I need to. I want to speak with your doctors. I mean, everybody has to pull their weight here. And also, he has to pull his weight. He has to do his homework, you know? Yeah. So I think people only get as far as they can with the support of a good team, but also wanting to better themselves, you know? And so that's what my mom's car accident taught me. Like, I always look at things in perspective of that. I know that sounds weird. So I've torn my psoas, I've broken fingers and toes and things like that. I've had crazy weird injuries, like a ruptured an eardrum diving, like whatever. But I always look at it and I'm like, man, she had to learn to walk again. She had to learn to write again. She had to relearn all of this. And she probably wasn't patient with herself in her own mind, but I just remember her taking it on with such grace and power. Like, she was like, I have to do this for survival and for my kids. So I was like, okay, let's do this. You know, so that's sort of how I look at it. I'm like, you know, it's going to be one step at a time. And my part is my part, but I'm just one little spoke in that big machine.
Your mom sounds amazing.
Oh, she is.
But I guess what I'm saying is the trial and error piece of you working with people, the more you trial and error with the more people that come in contact with you, you know, that's where your learning comes from. Cause we learn from the people in front of us.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, like, I, I always say this, and it's actually probably came from Sean, and he hates it when I quote things back to him that he said to me, but you know, to be a good teacher, you have to be an even better student. So like, yes. I never quite think of myself as a teacher, but like, I'm a sponge. I'm always like taking on a new course, a new this, a new that. I want to learn, you know, you're only here for a short time, so you might as well make the most of it.
It's true. Life is long and short at the same time.
Yes. Some days seem really long.
Yes, they do. Okay. So let's go back to resiliency and adaptability. Mm-hmm. Your mom's story is one that I don't go back to that, but I think about how amazing the human body is and how when people are in accidents, how they can completely transform and their body like repairs the way like a tree that might get cut and repair and it's still alive and it still does well. Mm-hmm. So, so what do you think are the best stages for being adaptable and being more resilient?
Like what does a person have to go through?
Yeah. Like maybe the steps and stages, because one wouldn't just automatically pick up weights and start weight training to be stronger for that. Right. Yeah.
I mean, no one's immune to injury. No one's immune to life happening. Your training should help mitigate injury, but I mean, we all got to start somewhere. So, I mean, the first thing I always start with is just basic body awareness. Right. And a lot of what I teach is how is your foundation for recovery first, right? Like I might get someone who's super athletic, but they're on burnout, like they're on adrenal fatigue. And I've had that before. And I was like looking at him and I was like, you're not okay. He's like, I'm fine. And I was like, okay. You know, so what's your sleep like? What's your nutrition? And it could always be better. That's the thing. Like, you know, you might have a dialed in, but it could always be better. So it is the foundation for everything. So I always check in with people's sleep and nutrition first, because if you're not doing those two things, you can't outrun it. You know, you can't out-train bad recovery. It's not going to happen. Also, when we have bad recovery, our hormone levels are out of whack, right? So depending on who you're training, maybe they're diabetic, maybe they're menopausal, like going through menopause. Maybe, you know, there's all these things. Maybe just like my one guy who's was elite level athlete, his cortisol levels were shot through the roof because it was just always go, go, go. There was never a time or a place for relax. And I don't mean like relax, Netflix and chill. I mean, having a good solid practice in your routine about time for you, right? And what does that look like for you? For myself, it's animals and plants. Like I need to do that once a day just to feel connected to myself, right? And
I think that just to interject, do you think people feel like rest is a weakness?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I used to think that way too, when I was a performer. Like I was a performer for 12 years and traveled around the world and it was awesome. And I remember being in the hot sun in Malaysia and I think we did like 27 shows in 14 days. Maybe it was Singapore. I don't know. It was hot. And I was like, I'm 27 years old and I feel like I'm 85 and I've been to so many countries and I couldn't tell you anything about them because all I do is work. And that's when I was like, I need to take a break for myself. You know, I want a family, I want a dog, and rest is not weakness. Rest is like how you connect with your deeper reasoning or why, right? So that's the nucleus of every good program. And any program I design for anybody, rest and recovery is first, right? Sleep and nutrition. And then we start building on just basic mobility. What is your body awareness like? How do you stand? How do your feet contact the ground? You know, how do you do joint articulations? Are you aware that if I ask you to move your shoulder, you're actually moving your ribs? That has everything to do with how you're going to pick up a weight later. Yeah. So a lot of the basis is, again, like I said, developing a routine for yourself, addressing recovery, and just basic mobility exercise. And then I bring them from isolation into integration. And we use a lot of locomotive techniques. So like stuff like, you know, like bear walking, or exactly crawling, all this. I'm basically just taking you back through to the developmental stages. I mean, that's how you learn to walk in the first place. So you need to revisit that to fix some weak links, right? And then we can add weight and then we can talk about strength training protocols and, you know, all this stuff, but you can't hope to build resiliency in your body if your foundation is weak. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the first step of body awareness could take years.
Yeah.
Just that for people.
It can. I mean, I try to not make it so heavy. I try to have only one lesson per session. And then I make a game out of it at the end, because the truth is you don't go through life thinking, well, where's my spine? What is my foot doing? But like, you need to just be able to adapt and improvise, right? And in any sport you play too, that's improvisation. So I, you know, maybe it starts off heavy and it's going to take time, but it should always feel rewarding at the end. You should feel leaving more energized than you do like, oh shit, that was heavy. Right. So I make games out of it by the end, little flow things, like you've seen teacup drills and things like that. Those are all just for your benefit, to let your brain turn off and let your body take over and sometimes teach your brain. Right. You want to get into that flow state. You don't always want to be like thinking about everything. It's too heavy.
So what about people who are so, and I don't know if this happened with your mom, but because of a trauma, they sort of can't map anything in their body. There's no way for them to, like, maybe they're shutting off the feeling sense or the connection because of the trauma. Is that going to take much, much longer? Or do you have games that, because I feel like play puts people back into the body always.
It does. So with people who have been through really traumatic experiences, physical or mental, and my people who are, you know, have MS or going through chemo and stuff, like, you can't expect them to be, no one's perfect anyway. So you can throw that away, right? It's about living in the safer margins that will build resiliency at first. And then what you do is you move those, once you've built some resiliency in those safer margins, you move those margins further away and you build more resiliency, right? So with the people that have trouble feeling things, right, is I give them landmarks. If you can't feel it from the inside, use your hands, use bands, use other things like, you know, kin tape. So I use all of those little tricks to help them have landmarks for feeling. And, you know, that comes along actually sometimes rather easy than people who can feel things.
You're more incredible than I even thought.
I'm not though. I'm just,
Work with people. I mean, it's easy to work with somebody who's already in shape, right? It's really easy to work with somebody who's already.
It's kind of boring actually.
It is. Well, we don't learn.
Tell them I said that. I still need those clients. But... Chris, you're not boring. You're not boring. You're average. No.
Marginal.
You're marginal, Chris. No, I'm just teasing.
But what an amazing toolbox to have, to know how to use the tape, to know how to use the bands, to know how to use blocks, to tell them how to tap into their own bodies, you know, get that mapping again into these areas of the body. You know, it could be even be just from childbirth, you know, just something like that.
I have someone who's had a emergency C-section, and basically, obviously, she doesn't feel anything from her belly button to her pubic bone.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the nerves are just not there. Yes, she has muscle tonus, but she can't feel it. So what do I do with someone like that? Just keep saying like, where's your pelvis? Where's this? That? Like, that means nothing. And if you can't find a way to communicate with that client, then you probably shouldn't have that client, you know? So I just have to learn. It's me who has to adapt and learn their language, not them learning my language.
Yeah. And that's actually one of the things in the podcast with John Yen was, you know, speak their language, like find the common ground of language. If you do dance and they do dance, maybe you can talk in the dance language.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what makes it fun too. Like, that's why I like working with, you know, quote unquote clients no one wants, because I'm like, oh yeah, I love a challenge. And there is no roadmap for this stuff. There is no right and wrong. I mean, you just have to be willing to go to their environment and meet them there. And you have to learn. It's like training any animal, right? Like, my dog doesn't speak English. I have to learn I have to train myself to train him.
Right. Right. Yeah. Okay. So, and then basic mobility, that the next step would be like, figuring out how to make the joints more mobile to then start building strength. Is that?
Yeah. So you can't train a position you don't have. You know, like, I get people coming in all the time. They're like, I want to do kettlebell snatch, but they have no overhead. Or my favorite is, I want to do handstands, but, like, you know, their arm doesn't even go past like their
being in front of their face. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you have to build resiliency in the joints themselves. So that's a local thing. And, you know, you just use basic mobility, flexibility, stability protocols. You want to live in the happy place of having a good balance of all three of those. So it's not about having this crazy flexibility practice or this crazy stability practice or this crazy mobility thing. You have to, again, start with smaller margins and then make them bigger. And then again, even though I'm working joint by joint, by the end of the session, you have to put it all together to integrate it in the body with some flow and locomotive, because that's how the body learns too, right? Nothing is stagnant. Nothing, even if you're standing still or holding an isometric, you know, like your body's still re-coordinating that one position.
Yeah. In gravity and space and time and the weather. So isolate the area, then integrate in terms of like larger movements, including more and more joints as you go.
Yeah, you got
it. Okay. Then weight and strength training, my favorite.
Yeah, me too, I have to say. I really enjoy strength training.
Me too. Okay. So it's interesting because sometimes I get asked like, oh, did you do dance? And I'm like, no, I didn't do any of that. I was like the pudgy kid who I like, but you know, we worked in the yard and the fields, like we didn't do the extracurricular activities. So getting into, but I always was obsessed with Arnold Schwarzenegger's body. Like I want, were you too?
Dude. Okay. So wait, backtrack. I mean, I'm a child in the 90s. That's where I was in high school. And when I figured out I can't do a push-up and get into this program, if I can't do a push-up. So my older brother, because there was only one gym and it was called the dungeon behind the pool.
The dungeon?
Yeah. It literally was like a dungeon. There was like one light that kind of like flickered in the windows and it was behind the local pool. So if you wanted to train, and no women trained there, by the way, no women. It was just like a key. No one at the desk, no showers, nothing. Like it's just a dungeon room with like really old equipment. And I looked at my brother and he was super into Arnold. And I was like, I need to be able to do push-ups and one-legged squats and everything. And he put on Pumping Iron. And I was like, who is this guy? And then our favorite quote for like that year of my life. So that was, I guess that was grade 11 or grade 12 for me. And he was just taking 1 year off before university. I can't quite remember anyway, but we would look at each other. And every time we were in the dungeon lifting weights, we'd be like, your body is changing. Look at you. You know,
I was obsessed. I was like, yeah. I need to look like that. And I think some people had to be like, well, he's a man and he's probably doing steroids, maybe.
Sure. I mean, but there's something to be said. And this goes back to Sean's physique. I never want to date a guy that I feel like I could break. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, so he's like a mailbox and he's always kind of been that way. And to me, I don't know. Strength is attractive, strength mentally and physically. And I don't need to see your muscles to know you're strong.
Right.
You don't
right.
have to have like these uber huge overdeveloped traps, you know, like, or biceps. I honestly see the strength in people mentally and physically. Mm. And I want to know that you can walk the walk and talk the talk, like both things. And to me, that's attractive. And I wanted to make sure for myself, like developing strength that you can use yes. to get out of bad situations in life, which is probably why I do jiu-jitsu now, is super, super important.
So. Yeah. I think I had this like weird fear of, when the kids were born that like, if anything happened to them, I couldn't pull them out of something or like hold my weight to hold them. Like, I don't know. It was this weird fear that I had.
I think that's a totally rational fear.
Oh, do you think so? Oh, maybe yes. It's like innate. It's like a, you know, historic.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't give birth to my kids. I'm a stepmom, but I've had them since they were 2 and 4 and mm-hmm. I would still jump in front of a train for them. I would do anything. It doesn't mean because you haven't birthed somebody, you don't have that bond. I mean, I would do it for my dogs. Like, you know, I just feel like as a parent, it is your job to protect these little beings until they're big enough and you've built them up enough to just go out into the world. So I don't think it's a rational fear at all. I'm like, I kind of think it's a problem if you don't have that.
Don't have that, yeah. It must be like this innate built-in thing. So anyway, I always wanted to be strong, strong, strong. And I don't think you could be too strong. Like, can you?
No, okay. No, not at all. Not at all. I totally 100% agree with that. People always ask me, they're like that band video. They're like, why do that? And like, why are you training like that? Like, aren't you strong enough? And I'm like, but like until the day I die, I want to be knowing that I can meet a challenge head on. It doesn't mean I won't be afraid, but I will be prepared. Right. Yeah.
I think the thing with the bands though, that's different than just regular weight training is it created so much instability that your whole body and brain had to figure it out. Like that's the biggest. Everything should shake. Everything should shake. But anyway, what's about you is that you're strong, but you also look like you're so flexible that you shouldn't be able to hold that strength.
So here's my problem. I'm super hypermobile. So when I was in dance, that was the perfect thing because you don't actually have to be as strong as you think. You just have to hit positions. Mm-hmm. And so all of my joints were so hypermobile, and that's just genetics, but I was in pain as a child.
That's an indicator, always
in pain. So when I started, you know, your body is changing. For once in my life, the pain that was caused during the workout was not real pain. It was just what I call sensory richness. And it was my body changing. I was like, holy shit, I'm lifting weights. And the stuff they said would hurt me because I'd been to all sorts of doctors about this stuff. And it bordered on EDS and stuff like that too, you know? So
what's EDS?
It's like, extreme version
mobility.
Of hypermobility. Like some people have hypermobility so much that like their eyes and their organs are hypermobile and things never quite fit. Like I have one client like that. Right. And so you have to be very careful because like they lack stability in the sense that like their nervous system also doesn't know it's past a point of no return because they have to barrier so far at one end range of motion to feel like they have any sort of stability. So super important that they do weight train. Whereas in the past, I mean, like as little as 10, maybe even 5 years ago, doctors would be like, and I'm saying doctors, but like most people I know were like, in my circle, were like, yeah, you need to strength train. But when I was in university, they were like, no, that's bad for you. And when I was a teen, they were like, that's bad for you. Look at your joints. They're too soft. You're like Gumby, you know? So in fact, I had to train harder to be stronger. Because my joints were so like most people's joints are elastic bands. They open and then they close. If you have hypermobility, it's like silly putty. It opens and
it just kind of hangs out there.
Hangs out there and kind of comes back, but never in the same pathway, you know?
Yeah. I think people think that being really flexible is a good thing. It's actually not. It's harder.
It is.
It's harder for you guys to like rein it back in. And
I would rather be a stiff tin man
and your body will stop you.
Yeah. Cause your body won't go past the, you know, but someone who's more flexible. And this is what I find with most women I train, like that, this is our large problem. They still have the stigma of you shouldn't lift weights. You don't want to look like a man. First of all, like most men have problems looking like men. Okay. So it's true. So weight training will help you build resiliency in your muscles and joints and longevity, but it has to be done progressively. And I do feel like there's not a person that I haven't trained going through whatever they're going through that we didn't get to the point where we did resistance training, whether it's with a band, dumbbells, like just like easy stuff. You don't have to be swinging kettlebells over your head. You're still a good person if you don't do that.
Right. So let's talk about like progressive strength. Okay. So say I go into the gym, I've never weight trained before and I leave and I go, yeah, I was sore for a week. I did it. That's not right. Right. Like it takes time. Yeah. So how would someone progressively load? I mean, you can't give me a whole program on here, but personally, I don't think being that sore is a good thing.
No. Yeah. It's like one thing we joke about in our certifications we teach, especially the kettlebell, like people like to think that it's a badge of honor to have like ripped hands and you're so sore. You can't even shampoo your hair or wash your body in the shower or walk up the stairs or go to the bathroom without pain. Like dude, that's way too far in the other direction.
Yeah.
So strength is relative to who you're training. I mean, there has to be progressive overload. So your stimulus, let's put it this way. I put my nerd goggles on for a second.
Yay.
I do have glasses. I'm not wearing them right now.
I forgot to put them on.
Yeah. So I'll just do that. So in a nutshell, whatever you do in your everyday life is your stimulus, right? And it's easy for you because you do it in your everyday life. So how you should start to incorporate load is just a little bit more, right? You want to introduce stimulus that's a little bit more than you do in your everyday life. So I'm not going to get my client to start front squatting like a barbell when they haven't done that ever. And they went from a sedentary person to walking, to doing, you know, mobility and body weight exercises. And you can up the volume in those body weight exercises, and you can start to introduce bands and things like that, nice and safe. But then when we start to introduce weights, it's got to be progressive, right? So maybe a dumbbell and they're just holding it in that front squat position. I really get my clients, this is my own thing, but front squatting before back squatting people. Okay.
Hey, wait. So explain the difference. Most people, front squat versus a back squat.
So front squat, you're loaded in the front. Back squat, gotcha. The barbell on the back.
Okay.
And most people, they're not strong enough to back squat right away. I think the front squat is queen. I'm going to say queen. because you really have to have a strong connection throughout the body to do it properly. So you build up that resiliency in the front squat, then you can move to the back squat. But some people, I mean, let's be honest, some people, I'm not going to load them in the back squat. A, they don't have the mobility. B, they come out of alignment and they're not connected to their body. So we want to make sure we're meeting the client at where they're at. So you want progressive overload that's just a little bit more than their everyday stimulus, if that makes sense.
Mm.
So that's how we start. And then we, you know, I make all my clients keep a journal. Yes, the fancy term is auto-regulation, but I call it adulting for yourself because I'm not in your body. So
auto-regulation in that they're in charge of their body.
Yeah. So I want to know how, you know, how their sleep was the night before. Did they eat breakfast? How did they feel during their warm-up? How did they feel after their workout? And teaching your clients this auto-regulation or adulting for themselves gives them permission to be more in tune with their body, because maybe I gave you a program that day, right? And you're just like, wow, I didn't really sleep the night before and I don't feel well, and I'm going to force myself through this workout. And if you force yourself through that workout and it feels like shit, and the next day you're so sore, you can't walk and you're sore for a week after, well, some of it might be my program, but some of it was also, I didn't teach you to adult for yourself. So I want you to get in tune with your body. You do the warm-up. You're like, oh, you know what? I actually feel better now. Oh, but Sarah said I should be doing 3 sets of 10 front squats with 35 pounds. I'm not feeling that right now. So I'm just going to use 10 pounds, right? So I want my client to learn how to adult for themselves, because then they can be in charge of progressive overload too. Yes, they come to me, they have their journal, I look over it, but I can see where the weak links are and where maybe we're falling short as a team here. Cause like, I can't do the work for them. They have to do it. But I also need to be able to adjust for what's going on in their life. Like I have people who work shift work. I cannot, when you're doing 3 night shifts in a row and then switching over to day shift with 1 rest day in between, expect that that's going to be your best lift day, you know? Like, so that's where auto-regulation comes in huge. And again, it's all built off of that recovery. So how much recovery do you need to be able to train this? And I would never put a client through a workout they don't have the capacity to recover from. That's just wrong. Yeah. It's okay to be sore, but it's not okay to be so sore you can't move.
You can't move. And if for the whole week.
Yeah.
I find, because, you know, I teach yoga in terms of like mindful movement, but we do a lot of body weight, but you can do a lot with the body weight in terms of like without the weights, you know, and for years, you know, we're doing like one leg isometrics, time under tension, you know, where those things get varied up a little bit. Do you have anything to say about time under tension? I'm curious. Let's talk.
To me, I play with all the variables in your body weight stuff before I start you on weights, right? So like I have clients with like rheumatoid arthritis and things like this. And you know, like, are they ever going to lift heavy enough to make a difference in their muscles? No, it's just like, it's too hard for them. But that doesn't mean I can't increase stimulus by, you know, putting more eccentrics in their program. Eccentrics are great. It's that neuro grooving pattern of what we want to happen in the safety margins that we've established for our clients. It's also really beneficial for your muscles because they'll heal longer, if you've ever heard that term, like you tear the sarcomeres and they actually will rebuild in that lengthened pattern. So I use a lot of eccentrics all the time. And that goes back to my dance days. Like, how do you think we learned to do the splits and come in and out of them safely? Body weight, time under tension, and tempo. And if I play this game with my clients all the time, red light, green light, not the Squid Game version. So, but literally, like, maybe we're working on squats. And if I say red light, like, you better be moving slow enough, and you could put a metronome on for them too, right? So yeah. You better be moving slow enough that when I say red light, you don't move. You can own and hold that position wherever it's at. And those exercises go so much further, right, than just giving them a weight and saying, like, here, rep off 20 squats. Even my weight training has got distinct four phase movements. There's always like two isometrics and then an eccentric and concentric phase. And I know most people don't write stuff like that, but that's how we do it at Agatsu. So, you know, the prep phase is everything too. And I could talk about that stuff till the cows come home, but if it's getting,
well, let's go back to, okay. So body weight would be they're using their own weight. Mm-hmm. Tempo is that they're doing a movement and they have to do it either through within metronome or, you know, you're telling them when to start, when to stop mm-hmm. type of movement. So they're owning it. Mm-hmm. Time under tension. So I want to explain that. So that's basically that they're in a position holding it just longer than normal.
Yeah. Or your tempo is time under tension, right? So basically what you're trying to do is get maximum motor unit activation. So the motor units in your muscles, right? If you keep going super, super fast, and the way I kind of explain it is like, let's say you have five workers and they're all from Quebec. So Jean-Guy, Pierre-Claude, all this stuff, right? And all I get you to do is bicep curls and it's with a 5-pound dumbbell. Well, you're not really going to see much muscle development because the stimulus isn't enough for you. Yes. And so only one of these workers has to work. So he's doing his bicep curls and the other four are off taking their like Quebec health break. So, all of a sudden I say, okay, you're going to take that 5-pound dumbbell, which you already are quite capable of moving like 100 times with no stimulus change. And I want you to go down for a count of five, really slow. So now that one worker can't sustain all of that. So he's going to have to call in more buddies. Right. And then I say, oh, you know what, let's turn that into like a supinated grip, eccentric chin up. So now you have to wake up all those motor units in those muscles to be able to perform that movement. And they're all firing. And so all your muscle fibers are working instead of just a few. And so the mind and body development is so much more. So that's how I even do strength training, right? And sometimes those are just isometrics. So that's time under tension. And our real thing that we want to get to is how much motor unit activation, how much mind-body connection can we squeeze out of this to really build resiliency? And that can be in leverage, that can be in time, that can be in weight. It just depends what you're trying to work. Yeah.
Oh God, I love it so much. Cool, eh? Because there's a million plus infinity ways that you can train.
And you never get bored. Like when people never get bored. Aren't you bored of this? I'm like, no.
Never. I know. Okay. So let's talk about the different contractions just for people that might not know it. Okay. So isometric is you don't change the muscle length and right. You hold it and yeah. Try and create more and more tension in it.
Yeah. And what's cool about that, and I think everybody shies away from them because it's like an old school thought, like, oh, I'm just going to hold a plank. I think everybody has to put more isometrics into their programs. I mean, find your weakest link, like maybe halfway down in your squat, you find your knees buckling and why not go halfway down and pause and hold your isometric there? Yeah. Like that is where the golden nuggets are going to happen, you know? And then there's also another introduction that most people don't think about, but you've seen it again, old timey, mostly in martial arts and dance, is a myometric. So you're holding an isometric, but there's external stimulus trying to move you.
Yes, push.
Exactly. That could be from a band. That could be using a Swiss ball, like planking with your feet on a Swiss ball. So there's all these amazing facets of just working in isometrics that I think people are just like, I just want to get to the sexy stuff. I'm like, isometrics are pretty sexy.
Isometrics are pretty amazing. And I like how you said it's a facet, because yeah, there's a lot of facets to it. I like to use the floor doing different things because it's never going to give. So they have an unlimited potential to recruit. Absolutely. For those. Okay. And then eccentric is like the lowering phase.
Yep.
And concentric is the explosive kind of.
Yeah. So when the muscle's contracting.
Okay.
So eccentric is when the muscle is lengthening, and then concentric is when it's contracting. So you can, I mean, I say you can do it. People like always say concentric should be explosive, but like, what if your weakest point is at the concentric phase? You should tempo that.
You should tempo it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think counting can be important. You know, I likened it to, there's some yoga methods that are just meant to do the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. And then of course you're going to get good at it because you've done it over and over and over again, the same exact thing. The problem lies in that you're not thinking about it.
Yeah.
And you're not like involved in it. You're just doing, you know, going through the movements. And the same thing could be true of weights, right? You're just like doing your bicep curls. You're just doing them over and over and over. And there's none of this other stimulus to fire up that muscle. And I guess what we're looking for by adding all these things, right? Like body weight, time under tension with the tempo, and things like that, is that we want the muscles to kind of quickly fire as quickly as they can, right? They just like, they kind of map much easier. Is that?
Yeah.
So you signaling is faster.
That's exactly it. So what you want is, if we go back to those little motor units, right? And we go back to the mind-body connection, you want that recruitment to be faster and more available in your everyday life. So you don't want it to have to take so much time to uptake. So that's really what we are looking at getting here. And without thinking about stuff you're doing, like that's the definition of insanity. You know, like I have a lot of people, it's like Kill Bill, like just wiggle your big toe, but it doesn't wiggle. And I'm like, yeah, I know. But if you're not thinking about it, you're not sending signals to that area anyway. And so your five workers will forever just be on break. You're not going to see change. And we know those people. And it's not like they're not trying, but they're training and they're there every day, 6 a.m. or whatever it is. And they're putting the effort in, but because it's kind of mindless and they're going through the paces, they're not getting results. Whereas you could spend half the time and you can think about it and move through it. And I always think about and I visualize the muscles I'm working because I want them to work harder. I want, you know, to get those motor units firing. I want, like, you've heard the saying, things that fire together, wire together. Mm-hmm. So the more you can think about that firing and that cycle of connection, it makes a stronger connection. And so when you
fire stronger, then that makes you the more adaptable, more resilient. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. And your body's like, I've been here, I feel safe. And it's exactly that. Like, so your margins become, you know, that path becomes a lot stronger. And then that's when you can creep those margins out a bit more. And then you build stronger connection there. And then you keep the margins out more and more. Yeah.
What do you think, drive someone to be better, to want to be ambitious enough to want to move better, be pain-free? I mean, do you think it's when they get to the point of like, they're at the lowest point where no one else can help them? Or do you think there's other markers?
So there's a lot. It depends who you are and what your why is, to be honest. Like, so some people they've gotten to the point where they're in so much pain, they've hit rock bottom and they have nowhere else to go but up. So that's good. So you're at the bottom. So awesome. The only place you can go is up. So I've had those people. I've also had people who are just like, I'm just sick of myself. I want to look good naked. Okay. So like whatever gets you in the door in the beginning is awesome. I really don't care what it is. If you are here because you want to work on yourself, I am here to help you. And usually because of the way we practice, and I say usually because I've only fired two clients before in my life, usually because of the way we practice, because it's skill-based, it quickly turns in from, I want a tight butt and a six pack to, I want to feel stronger for me as I age. And I want to be able to do these things for myself and not ask for help, or just, I want to feel like a badass or a superhero. And I mean, the easy one is to be out of pain, but as you train and you're building resiliency, you will be out of pain too. Yes. Right. So, I really think it depends on that person's why, but I think that if the why is shallow in the beginning, I'm not going to poo-poo it either, because it's their journey and it'll be their evolution. Yeah. And I know that's not the way hopefully most trainers think, but I think in the fitness industry, what's presented in media is pretty shallow, you know? So I can't help. I can't fault clients for thinking that way.
Right.
In the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I actually, one of the things that John Yen says is having a physical retirement plan.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. So what are the things that you want to do when you're 80, 90? You just do them now. So if you want to be able to do one pull-up when you're 80, then just keep doing one a day now, even though it's easy. So I thought that was a really cool idea of like the future. But yeah, I mean, my goal is to be pain-free.
Yeah.
And I find that the stronger I get, the more flexible I am, the happier I am, move better. You know, you can't go wrong with strength training. So you guys work a lot with kettlebells. So is that like a Gatsu specialty or?
Sorry, go ahead.
No, like, is that everything that Agatsu is? I know you do other things there, like training, but is that the original thought, was kettlebells?
So Agatsu started out as a martial arts company. Right. And Agatsu is, the full sentence is Masakatsu Agatsu. It's Japanese for beginner's mind. Oh. Or because in Japanese, things have two meanings. True mastery is self-mastery, right? So that's really the basis of Agatsu training. And so it is like being able to, quote unquote, have a physical retirement plan. You know, like we don't really care about your tight butt and six pack. We care about the connection you're making for yourself later and in the present. So it started out as a martial arts company. And then Sean learned kettlebells as a way to train martial artists. And he introduced kettlebells in Canada. So he's the first person to have certifications here. He was bringing them in, turning off his heat, you know, getting them shipped from across the world and selling kettlebells too. But he'd always had a much deeper practice than just kettlebells. It's just how he got known at first. So he'd always had the joint mobility practice because of being a martial artist. And we do have joint mobility courses. When I started working for Agatsu, because of my dance background and my performance background, we sort of melded the two worlds together, the martial art and the dance performance, and developed the mobility and movement courses. And then we have a strength and speed specialist course that's taught by Tyson Lerone, who is amazing, registered massage therapist, super flexible, black belt in BJJ, and a West Side barbell guy. So, you know, it's not, Agatsu's not a system for people who are already in shape. It's a system for people to get in shape. And everyone who teaches for us actually went through the system, right? So like you can look at someone like Jeanette Pearson, who's a Gatsu Atlantic. She's just as strong as she is flexible. And she's a product of the way we train. Like she was my client. And then I was like, dude, you need to teach. And she's like, really? And I was like, yeah, your story and what you've been through and what you've achieved and how you inspire others. Oh,
I think I follow her.
Yeah, you probably
do. I follow her. Yeah.
She's the silver haired beauty.
Yes. She's beautiful and very strong. Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously they've trained with other people before, but we wouldn't just take on a coach that's like, oh yeah, you're amazing at this and we've never trained with you or worked with you and you'll just become, you know, a coach for us. No, like everyone who's a part of Agatsu has been with Agatsu for a long time and we all train the same and have the same value system and we're not stuck and dogmatic about things, which I think is super important.
So have you, is it a place you go to, or is everything online now?
So we have our own gym in Montreal. And then our head instructors have their own gyms too, and they teach the Agatsu methods too. So Tyson has his gym in Edmonton. Jeanette has one in Moncton. We have one in Chapel Hill with Sarah and Greg. So we have different affiliate gyms. The headquarters is in Montreal. And we, Sean and I and Tyson, travel around the world training trainers in the different certifications.
Wow.
Before COVID anyway. So then in COVID, we shifted to online, teaching the courses online. And then because so many people were stuck in their homes, we developed a system that wasn't just for trainers, but we have everyday people studying with us too. And we have everyday people studying with us at the gym as well. But online now we have something we developed called Follow Fitness Pros. And it's all the people that, you know, fitness professionals that we really like, that we're just like, hey, this is your chance to be able to study with them as well. And it's not like, it's not as expensive or as in depth as a certification, because some people aren't ready for that. Like, you're just beginning your journey. You don't need to know about progressive overload right away. You just, you're like, my back hurts and I want to make it better. So you can log on to any coach's profile and they have freebie follow along routines. And then if you want, you buy some tokens and you get another routine, you know? So it's super easy and accessible that way. And we've had a lot of people, they're like, oh my gosh, I just did your office desk stretches and I feel great. Aww. So I'm going to try your follow along body weight class. You know, and I make mine anywhere from 5 minutes to 20 minutes. It's not longer than that because I want it to be digestible for beginners.
Yeah.
Because a beginner can't sustain 1 hour of working out and they shouldn't be shunned for that. You know, I would rather you take small little movement snacks throughout your day. And if you did that 3 or 5 times throughout your day, look at the amount you've added up.
Yeah.
And that's amazing. Like, that's a good step forward versus going back to what you said, you trained for that hour, you're a beginner. Now you can't walk for a week because you're so slow. You know?
Okay. My last question I've been asking everyone this year, this season, what is the meaning of life for you?
That's such an easy question to answer. I'm glad you asked it. No. I don't know. I like, it's going to sound cheesy, but like just to be joyful and spread that. Like, I know that sounds so silly, but I mean, I always look at the news some days and people are focused on like the negative stuff and like this and this and this. And I'm like, you know what though, if you're not contributing to the good in the world, then what's the point? And until there is more bad in the world than there is good, this is still a good place to be.
Yeah.
And you have to be a part of that community. You know, like, that's why we have the gym. Do I need to have the gym? No. I teach online. I teach trainers, but honestly, I get more joy out of helping someone do their first push-up or have no back pain than I do training a trainer. And I'm not saying I don't enjoy training trainers, but there has to be a deeper push to it. So like, I honestly think it's just to share your message and to contribute and spread joy.
Contribute. Yeah, I agree. And spread joy. I love to spread joy.
You have to be a contributing member in that.
Of society, right?
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being here. I can't thank you enough. I just appreciate your time. Yeah, this was awesome.
Well, I can't wait to learn more about all the other podcasts, because I looked at some of them and I listened to some of them. I was like, this girl's the bomb. So I'm super flattered you asked me on, and I look forward to listening to more of your awesome work.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening. I do hope that you found this podcast helpful and that there's something that you can take away from it that will really improve your life physically, mentally, and emotionally. I do these free of cost for you all and hope that it's a good resource for you. If you are looking for anything Ohana related, feel free to check out our website, ohanayoganh.com. Thank you and have a beautiful day.